And joining us on Perspectives today is Neil Stevenson. Neil is the author of Rimdi, Anathem, and the most recent one that we're going to talk about is Seven E's. And it's a big book, more than 800 pages, but it's a very interesting book. Once you get into it, you forget what page you're on and you keep going. And what I understand, Neil, is that I said it was your latest book, your new novel, but if I understand correctly, you've been working on this for a while. It's an old project.
Well, that's typically how I work. I will get an idea and kind of let it simmer on the back burner for a few years before I make the decision to go ahead. And this one simmered for a particularly long time. I probably came up with the idea close to 10 years ago and came back to it every so often and thought about it and did a little writing and a little thinking about it. And so a couple years ago, for various reasons, I just decided it was time to go for it and make something out of this. And by that time, I had it pretty well sketched out in my head.
Now, this book is, I think you said that you started writing or wanted to write about it because what you've been hearing and reading in the news about the space debris?
Well, that was kind of the kernel of the idea. It's it goes way beyond that, but where it all started was that I was reading some papers about the space debris problem, speculating that there could be a kind of chain reaction where two pieces of it bang into each other up there in orbit and shatter into many more pieces. And the more pieces you have, the greater the probability of collision. And the more collisions you have, the more pieces of debris you have. And that could kind of snowball, supposedly, and create a kind of a shell of orbiting debris above our heads that would make it hard to get into space. So that's a actual research topic with space scientists. It's what I decided to do here for Seven Eves was to take that basic idea, that mechanism, and just blow it up a million times bigger and have it all start with the moon fragmenting.
We're visiting with Neil Stevenson. He is the New York Times bestselling author, and the latest novel is Seven E's. And what you mentioned about blowing up in the moon, and it's just incredible the way it starts. And you know, that gentleman is up there, and he sees the moon explode. And I can't imagine being someone like that, and then, you know, wanting to take that picture and create an app and all that. And he's probably excited and scared at the same time.
Yeah, at first it's it seems like a scientific marvel, and it is. It's very mysterious. There's no known mechanism that could actually make that happen. So it's kind of a science project for about a week until people begin crunching the numbers and thinking about what it means, and they realize that there is going to be this snowball chain reaction that is going to, in a couple of years, inundate the surface of the Earth with a meteor shower that's going to render the whole planet uninhabitable.
Now, one of the things that, you know, we talked about this year was a red moon, and everybody was talking about that. And so tell us, how would it be if the moon explodes? And you talk about the fragments, and I was wondering, just picturing from reading your novel, what would that look like without the moon? Would the light still be there? Would we just have a little bit of light?
Well, the way it works in this book is that the moon doesn't just vaporize; it doesn't just disappear. It breaks up into about seven large chunks and a whole lot of smaller pieces. And those chunks don't all fly away; they remain kind of gravitationally attracted to each other, so they're still milling around up there kind of at random, and they're still following the orbit of the original moon. So, you know, if you look at your tide table, your almanac, and it says the moon is going to rise at 7:30 p.m., and you look out your window at 7:30 p.m., you'll see seven big rocks come over the horizon instead of the moon, and the sunlight is going to reflect off of those in the same way it reflects off the moon, so they'll have a similar general appearance to what the moon does. But it's always changing because these things are kind of chaotically orbiting around each other.
And that's one of the things that you point out in your book, that once these pieces spread apart, they become observable as separate objects, but at the same time, they can't. They continue. It's not enough to continue flying apart because of the moon, the gravitation. The rocks are still orbiting around, as you mentioned. So people will see like many moons, I guess.
Yeah, many moons that are uneven. They're not round. They're just like if you took a big rock and just shattered it with a sledgehammer, you get irregular pieces of different sizes.
We're visiting with Neil Stephenson. Neil is New York Times bestselling author. His latest novel is Seven E's. And one of the things that I was wondering about, and perhaps our listeners would wonder also, tell us a little bit about, and we're going to go away from the book for a while, but taking you back to when you were growing up, as a boy. I don't know if you were like, most little boys, we like hearing about space and Martians and invaders and monsters and all that stuff. Were you always into science fiction, Neil?
Pretty much. I grew up in Ames, Iowa, which is a university town, home of Iowa State, which is a, it's a land-grant school. There's a strong emphasis on science and engineering, and a lot of the people who lived there in that community were professors of technical fields, and those were the people I grew up around. And you know how it is, where whatever town you grow up in, you think that's normal until you move away and you find out that it's special in its own way. So I used to ride my my bike down to the bookmobile every week. It would stop at a location not too far from our house, and I would check out whatever they had in the way of the very latest science fiction. And I loved all that great old science fiction with rocket ships and aliens and the classic golden age of science fiction type stuff.
Now, did you enjoy also watching movies on television and buying comic books, anything like that?
Yeah, I bought a lot of classics comics for some reason, we just had a 12-inch black and white TV set that my dad made from a Heath kit, so it was pretty basic. But I would watch Star Trek, the original Star Trek series, when it came out on that TV. Didn't realize that they were wearing different colored uniforms until years later.
And, when you mentioned classics comics, I mean, that took me back to my childhood, because those were great comic books and they covered a lot of literature as well, and classics instead of just, comic books that were for fun.
Yeah, they were a fantastic series, and they had an order form in the back where you could check the boxes and order, another set of them, and they'd show up in the mail. Yeah, for those listeners who aren't familiar with it, this is a series of comics where they would take classics of literature like Moby Dick or David Copperfield or Treasure Island or what have you, and they would produce them in comic book form. And obviously it's a simplified version of the story and it's aimed at a younger audience, but it was still enough that you could get the general idea of the story and be transported into another world or another time for a little while.
We're visiting with Neil Stephenson. Neil is the New York Times bestselling author. A recent book is Seven E's. Tell us about the title, Neil, Seven E's.
Well, those who don't like spoilers may wish to turn down their radio, but it's a reference to the fact that later in the book, the human race has been reduced to a tiny surviving number, and they're all women, and so there's eight women alive, but only seven who are of childbearing age, and so it is from them that the future human race is going to be reconstructed, and so each one of them becomes like an Eve, the mother of a race, and each one of them decides to go a different direction in terms of what kind of progeny she wants to populate the world with.
Now, when you mentioned the races, I think, is there like seven different races or something like that?
There ends up being even more, but the basic theme of it is that they have access to a genetic engineering lab, and they end up tinkering with their genetic makeup to sort of realize their personal visions for the kind of world that they want to produce in the future.
You mentioned Star Trek a little while ago when we were discussing that, and on your homepage you talk a little bit about the fact that the way aliens have been described and developed by other science fiction writers or producers of television, movies, whatever, were kind of like stuck with us as far as the popular culture, that they were English-speaking humanoids. And as you mentioned, Star Trek, similar to us, that we can even breed with them. But your subtext here seems to be different, that the aliens, we are the aliens, not the other people.
Yeah, we are the aliens. The alien world is the Earth. And so, yeah, it's almost universal in science fiction and fantasy worlds to have these different alien groups, or in a fantasy novel like The Lord of the Rings, you know, you've got humans, but you've got also the elves and the orcs and hobbits and so on. So that is a really commonplace feature of both fantasy and science fiction. And I thought it would be interesting to write a book where we actually know how those came about. Where did those come from?
We're visiting with Neil Stephenson. Neil is New York Times bestselling author. The recent novel is Seven Knees. It's a great science fiction book. It's about 800, a little bit over 800 pages, so it's a big book, but it also has a lot of information. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, Neil, from reading this book, it won't attract just science fiction lovers. This book is almost tailored to different genres, and different readers will be attached to it for different reasons.
Well, I hope so. Sometimes for some folks, the term, the label science fiction can be off-putting, and they'll think, oh, I don't want to read that. You know, it's going to be weird, or it's going to be about things I don't understand. Seven Eves starts out in basically the very near future of our world. So people are driving around in cars and using cell phones, and basically no different from the world that we live in today. So I think it's pretty approachable in that sense, and the story that develops from that starting point is it's got a lot of technology in it, but it's technology we see on TV all the time. It's the International Space Station. It's space suits. It's the same kind of rockets that we see taking off from Cape Canaveral all the time. So I hope it'll be a fairly approachable book, even for the kind of reader who doesn't necessarily think of themselves as a science fiction kind of person.
Well, because in some areas, I think it's almost written to attract academia, people in academia, as I mentioned, you know, people who are science fiction fans, people who are literature fans. But it's just the way the story is written, and you guide us through it. It's not just a bunch of, well, make-believe. And it guides us, as you mentioned, in the very near future. It has the International Space Station. It has different people in the world talking about, you know, some of the things that are going on now. And I wonder about what we're going through now with space travel and all the talk about going to Mars and eventually, you know, exploring other planets. Did that have anything to do as far as in 70s? Do you deal with that at all?
Well, I've been a little space geek my whole life. You know, when I was 3 years old, I would sit in front of the big old TV, you know, on the rug and watch the Gemini, you know, missions and so on. So never stopped following rockets in space. So that has always been a source of fascination for me. And so, you know, I hope that comes through in the way that I've tried to present this story.
It does. And one of the other things that I was curious about is on your homepage, and that is neilstephenson.com, you talk about having a bias about interstellar travel. You want to explain that?
Well, yeah, it's commonplace in science fiction to show people traveling between different star systems. And that's fine. I enjoy that as much as the next person. But we can't actually do that until we discover some new kind of physics. Because according to the physics that we know now, we just can't, we can't do it. It would take many, many thousands of years to get to the closest star system, and it would take an amount of energy that's very difficult for us to manage. So it is a you know, short of making up some kind of fantasy physics or fantasy technology, we're kind of stuck with exploring inside our own solar system. So that's the bad news, and the good news, in my opinion, is that there's lots to do here. There's fascinating places to go, and there's plenty of material in the form of asteroids for us to work with to build the structures that we would need to survive and thrive in outer space.
We are visiting with Neil Stephenson. Neil is a New York Times bestselling author, and his recent book is Seven Knees. It's a science fiction novel, but as we were discussing earlier, it's not the typical science fiction as you would imagine, because it reads like, you know, a novel literature. It's not very complicated as far as imaginable, and you're going, well, that could never happen, because it's very common, very believable, some of the things that are happening here. And one of the ladies that is featured in your book, her name is Dinah, and her father, Rufus, which I thought was interesting that they were still using Morse code.
Well, her father is a guy who runs mines, and he's lived all over the world working in the mining industry. And I know some old miner types like that, and it's not unusual for such people to be ham radio enthusiasts, because when you're out in the middle of nowhere, you got to have a way to communicate. And sometimes they're in places where you can't just pick up the phone or get on the internet. So that's a pretty common mining thing, and the old school ham radio people and some of the new people as well use straight up Morse code to communicate. So that's all pretty much straight from reality. And another thing that's straight from reality is that the International Space Station does have its own ham radio outpost. So you can communicate with the ISS that way. So I've simply taken those two things here and made them into a feature of the story, where this fellow up in Alaska running a mine in the Brooks Range, has a daughter who's an asteroid miner in orbit, and he uses his Morse code skills to communicate directly with her on the ISS without having to go through NASA.
One of the other characters that you introduce us to is Dr. Harris. If you want to tell us a little bit about him, he's an interesting fella.
This is a fellow who is a legit scientist in his own right. He's an astrophysicist at Caltech, but he's also got a gift for popularizing and talking about science. And we need to have people like this in our society, because we're dependent on science and technology, and so we need people who understand it and who can explain it. So he's one of those guys, and needless to say, when the moon blows up and things like that start to happen, his phone rings, and he becomes an even more important figure as he ends up spending a lot of time trying to calm people down and try to explain what's going on as best as it can be explained. And eventually he's launched up into space, and he ends up being one of the people up there on the ark.
When you're talking about that, and when I was reading that part, it sounded a lot kind of like you know, the panic that people had to be calmed down during the War of the Worlds broadcasts, and the fact that people actually thought that we were being attacked by Martians, and very believable. And so it takes somebody like Dr. Harris to calm people down, and he's able to tell them not technology language, but everyday language, to what exactly is going on. We're visiting with Neil Stephenson. He is the New York Times bestselling author of the recent book, Seven Knees. It's a science fiction novel that is a big book, and it's a great book that you can read and then pass it on to somebody else, but it'll be a while unless you're a fast reader. It took me several days to get through this, but I did. And we're talking about some of the characters now in the novel, and we just talked about Dr. Harris, talked about Rufus, and we talked about Dinah. And tell us about Ivy Chow.
She is, at the beginning of the book, she's the commander of the International Space Station. She's an astronaut. She's one of these kind of straight arrow, super high-achieving kind of people who was raised in Southern California and, you know, taught to play the violin and be an athlete and a star student and everything else. And she went to Annapolis and then got a degree in physics and joined the astronaut corps. So she's one of those sorts of people. We all have, you know, seen or heard about these ultra high achievers, and she and Dinah end up having a great relationship with each other, mainly because they're so different. They're raised in very different circumstances. They have complementary personality types, and they kind of lean on each other. And so a lot of the book is told kind of from the point of view of these two women and their friendship and how they kind of support each other and help each other do the things that need to happen in the wake of this disaster.
We're visiting with Neal Stephenson. Neal is the best-selling author and the author of the recent novel, Sevenies. You mentioned the Ark a little while ago, and in the book you have different names for different things or places, and one of the ones that I came across that I meant to ask you about is the International Space Station is also linked to something that they call or term the banana.
So if you are a reader of classic science fiction, you've probably seen pictures of space stations. Unfortunately, we've never actually built one of these, but they look like big donuts that spin around like a merry-go-round to produce a feeling of simulated gravity. And so in my near-future version of the International Space Station, when the story begins, they've built one of these and sort of stuck it on the tail of the International Space Station, and so it's a donut-shaped thing divided up into several compartments where people can live and work, and the largest single compartment is a conference room, and it's painted yellow, and it's curved because instead of being constructed on a flat floor like a conference room in a terrestrial building, it's built, you know, it's a part of a donut-shaped object. So they call it the banana because it's curved and it's yellow. And a lot of the important conversations in the book, including a very important conversation toward the end, take place within the banana.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you try and keep it believable, and you do talk about iPads and, you know, different things that people know about nowadays, NASA, PR, television, and I guess I'm interested in what happened as far as the calendar and what goes on, because you start naming the time and the calendar after the moon explodes, correctly? So it's like, yeah, A plus zero or whatever. Can you explain
right,
that?
They just begin on new dating systems. So instead of BC or AD, they kind of start the clock at the moment that the moon broke up.
And as far as the Seven Sisters, is that something that, well, explain that to us if you don't mind.
Well, that's just the name that they slap onto the seven original pieces of the moon, the big rocks that are initially formed. And it only lasts for about a week because after about a week, one of them breaks in half. And so at that point, they've got eight, and the old names don't really work anymore.
We're visiting with Neal Stephenson. Neal is a New York Times bestselling author, and his recent novel is Sevenies. It's a science fiction novel, and we hope we haven't given away spoiling the story or anything because of what you mentioned earlier about the races. But I think people will still get drawn into this because the way that Neal starts this book is, it's almost like you're feeling like you're reading a story about some country farmer, or because he talks about an amateur astronomer looking up and he watches the moon exploding, and then from there it just kind of takes you through what's happening throughout the time, and then he introduces us to the various characters as we talked about. But this is something that on your homepage you also have a video of a rocket. Do you mind telling us about that?
Yeah, that's the launch that just happened a couple of weeks ago out there by Van Horn. You're in El Paso, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's only...
Not too far away.
A couple hours drive away from you. You go to Van Horn, and it's north of Van Horn. So, yeah, that's Blue Origin. That's Jeff Bezos' private space company. I worked there for a few years in the early days of that company. Haven't been there since about 2006, I think.
Well, Neil, if you're up this way again, you're going to have to stop by and visit us.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
And you can go to the Alamogordo Space Hall of Fame there. And I think they have a ham buried there as well, the monkey.
Oh, really?
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much for being with us. We've been visiting with Neil Stephenson, and Neil is a New York Times bestselling author. His latest novel is Seven Knees. Thank you, Neil, for being with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun talking to you.
Thank you.